Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is Dr. John Shelton Reed, who taught sociology for many years at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. He is an authority on Southern cultures, an interest that began during his youth in Kingsport, Tennessee. Two of Dr. Reed's most recent books have dealt with Southern barbecue, but his new book is the story of a drink. The book, entitled The Ramos Gin Fizz, was recently published by the Louisiana State University Press as part of its iconic New Orleans Cocktails series. John Shelton Reed, congratulations on the publication of Ramos Gin Fizz.
Thank you, Fred. I'm pleased to have it. I've been writing about barbecue for several years now, and I decided it was time to write about something else.
This is your first venture, you say, into cocktail writing.
It is indeed. I ventured where wise men would probably fear to tread, but it turns out that there's an awful lot of cocktail historians out there, and they know a lot of stuff. So I had to work it up real fast. But this is an interesting cocktail, though. I made it easy. I'd have a hard time writing a book about some others because there's just not that much to say, or at least I don't know what to say. This one, though, got a history, and it's got a lot of ingredients. You can talk about each ingredient. Before you know it, you've got a small book.
Definitely. Well, you include several recipes and variations, some of them weird, in the book. Later in the program, I want to have you walk our listeners through the procedure to make a traditional Ramos Gin Fizz. But first of all, before we do that, tell me the absolute essential elements that it takes to make one of these drinks.
Well, it's got 9 ingredients, and you need all 9. Let me see if I can get them off the top of my head. You need, first of all, lime juice and lemon juice. They're different. You need them both. You need gin, of course. It's called the Ramos Gin Fizz. You need egg white. You need heavy cream. You need some club soda, soda water. You need some orange flower or water, which is an exotic ingredient. We can talk about that some. That gives it an aroma that's distinctive. Anyway, that's enough. I wasn't counting.
Well, the distinctive thing about this drink to me, in addition to the orange flower water, which is used in Middle Eastern desserts and drinks, is the fact that you have that foamy egg white topping.
Yes. Yeah, it's not the only drink that's got egg white in it. You know, a number of drinks do. But when you shake it with egg white, it does create a sort of frothy, meringue-like texture.
And that texture, that egg white topping, has elicited a whole lot of flowery adjectives over the years.
Oh, yes. No, in its early days, shortly after it came out, the Times-Picayune newspaper said that, you know, it's indescribable. But people have been trying to describe it, even though it's indescribable. I've got a selection here of what they said. Like a tangy liquid meringue with a gin hit, a foamy alcoholic orange creamsicle, sort of drinkable key lime pie, like drinking a flower, heaven in a glass, a liquid cloud of joy, ginny pillows of orange blossom delight, decadent floral smooth as silk, essence of angel feathers blended with whipped moonbeams. The word ethereal is often used.
Yes. Listeners may notice we pronounce this Ramos. It's not a Hispanic word. It's not Ramos. It's Ramos. And tell me about H.C. Yes. Carl Ramos, who I understand was the son of German immigrants in New Orleans.
That's right. His name was Henry Charles Ramos. He went by Carl. Yeah, everybody, I thought it was Ramos. I mean, I've read it for years, never heard it, actually heard it pronounced. And a lot of people talking about it, if you go to YouTube, they do call it Ramos. But some other people said Ramos, and I got curious about that. So I went online, and I went to one of these sites that, you know, gives you telephone numbers, and I looked up all the Ramoses in New Orleans that I could find, and there were a dozen or so of them. And only one had a first name that wasn't Hispanic name, and he was named Charles. I thought, well, that's a good solid name. In fact, it's the middle name of the man I'm interested in. So I called him up out of the blue, and it turns out he's Henry Charles Ramis's great nephew. So
wow.
He was delighted to hear from me, and I was delighted to run into him. And he told me it's pronounced Ramos.
Yes. All right. This drink, we're going to talk about Huey Long. Of course, Huey Long made some false claims about it, that his grandfather
yes.
invented it in the 1850s, which we know is not true. But let's look at the business life of Carl Ramos. He opened a couple of bars there in New Orleans, not in the French Quarter, but across Canal Street in the business district.
That's right. Yeah. The Ramos Gin Fizz has this sort of antebellum mystique. You know, you picture guys in linen suits, this kind of thing. But in fact, it was invented around 1890, and it was not invented for planters and riverboat gamblers or anything like that. It was a businessman at the Cotton Exchange. Cotton Exchange was right across the street from Carl Ramos's saloon, and he quickly became a hit with them. They were coming over buying gin fizzes all day long, actually. But you mentioned that he was German. Let me say just a bit more about that. I did not know, and many people I've spoken to didn't know how big the German community in New Orleans was.
Yes,
in the late 19th century, but one in eight people there was a German immigrant. So he was part of a very considerable German community. His wife was of German extraction. His first tavern was in the ground floor of something called Meyer's restaurant, again, a German name. They're all over the place, and they're still there, although they sort of went underground at the time of World War I. In Carl Ramos's case, he started working in beer halls as a teenager, a couple of beer halls owned by other New Orleans Germans. And then he went to Baton Rouge and went to work in an American-style bar and became a skilled bartender. Opened his own saloon in Baton Rouge for a while, then decided to move back to New Orleans. And about that time, he invented the Ramos Gin Fizz, and the rest is kind of history.
He employed people known as shaker boys. You go into a lot of detail on the shaking procedure to finish
yes.
off this drink. Tell me about the shaker boys.
Yeah, this drink has to be shaken. I mean, that's what produces the foamy texture, and it has to be shaken for a long time. Exactly how long is a matter these days of myth. People think 12 minutes, 15 minutes. No. Two or three minutes is plenty, but even that is a long time. That's what they did at the Ramos's bar. 2 or 3 minutes, by all accounts. But he hired these shaker boys, so-called, to do the manual labor of shaking the drinks. The bartenders would put them together, hand them to a shaker boy who would shake it. And eventually they evolved this system where there were a long line of shaker boys, and one would shake it, hand it to the next, he'd shake it, pass it on. And so you had this sort of assembly line here of shaker boys. Incidentally, anybody who's familiar with the way white Southerners talked in the Jim Crow era will not be surprised to learn that these shaker boys were African-American and not necessarily boys, and they were African-American men doing this menial labor. They did it with gusto, and they became something a show. I mean, part of the reason you went to Ramos's restaurant, and everybody did, was to watch the shaker boys at work. It was a show. It became a tourist attraction. People all around the country knew about his saloon and his drink and the shaker boys, and everybody who came to New Orleans, seems like everybody, well, every male anyway, women were not allowed in the bar, but every male tourist, white male tourist who came to New Orleans had to go get at least one glass of Ramos Gin Fizz. I've got a lot of stuff in there, newspaper accounts from all over the country of people talking about the Ramos Gin Fizz. Mr. Ramos was famous for it.
It's astounding to me the number of eggs that Ramos's bars went through in a typical day.
Yeah, well, early on, I mean, at his first bar before he moved to the bigger one, they were using 5,000 egg whites, doing hundreds of thousands of these drinks a year.
The second bar that he owned, the Stag Saloon, he decided to close it in 1919, and less than 5 months later, Prohibition hits.
His brother, who was his partner in the business, started a paint company making something called Gin Fizz. It's the brand, Gin Fizz Paint. Had nothing to do with gin. It was spelled J-I-N-N.
Once the drink did survive Prohibition, in the middle of the 20th century, tell me how it became associated with sophistication and glamour.
Right. Well, it did come back strong after repeal. I mean, even before repeal, people were making and drinking Ramos Gin Fizzes. It was being made in particularly in hotel bars all around the country. And it did acquire this aura of sophistication and glamour. I mean, it was in a Humphrey Bogart movie, his leading lady orders a Ramos Gin Fizz. I've got a still picture of that.
Let's mention playwright Tennessee Williams, who was a Ramos Gin Fizz fan.
Oh, yes. It was his favorite drink, for sure. And he drank a lot, so he drank a lot of that. Got a picture of him, a portrait, in the Mississippi Literary Hall of Fame, and he's sitting there with the Ramos Gin Fizz in front of him. We mentioned Huey Long. It was his drink as well.
Yeah, tell me about Huey Long's 1935 trip to New York City to demonstrate the Ramos
yes.
Gin Fizz.
Okay, yeah, Huey Long was the governor, flamboyant governor of Louisiana, and then he was elected to the U.S. Senate and was plainly positioning himself to run for president. His favorite drink was the Ramos Gin Fizz. In fact, when he traveled, he took a bartender with him to make them right. And the story goes, as he told it, that he went to the Hotel Manhattan in New York, and they had something they called a Ramos Gin Fizz, and he said he sampled it, and it wasn't any good, and he sampled it again to make sure he was being fair, and then he sampled it again just to be absolutely certain. Said he's on the wagon, but he needed to know. So finally, he said you guys don't know how to do this. He flew in a bartender from Hotel Roosevelt in New Orleans to show them how to do it. It made national news, turned up in the newsreels, thanks. And it went on forever. It started to die down. The question arose, well, did he? Oh, he said his granddaddy invented it, but his brother came and said, no, he didn't. So that made national news. He said he put vanilla in it. That's another whole lengthy dispute. So people all over the country, bartenders all over the country, were saying what an abomination this was that he put vanilla in his. He just kept the news cycles going. He was assassinated not long after that.
Tell me how the 60s counterculture and the disco craze in the 70s and 80s almost killed this drink.
Right. Well, it was very much in the 50s, it was very much a classic drink. Along came the 70s and the disco era, and all kinds of things just fell apart. As a cocktail writer, one has suggested that what happened was that the values of the 60s, the countercultural values of the 60s, seeped into mass culture. And the young people who would formerly have been drinking cocktails started smoking marijuana instead. The ones that were drinking started going to discos and rejected their parents' drinks. You know, they're not interested in stuffy old drinks like martinis and old fashions. They're going to get these disco drinks called things like Fuzzy Navel. They tend to be made with vodka. They tend to be sweet. If you're a real cocktail enthusiast, you view this with disdain. Mm-hmm. But in fact, all the classic cocktails really went into eclipse in the 70s and 80s, including the Ramos Gin Fizz, perhaps even especially the Ramos Gin Fizz, because it was so hard to make. That changed in the 90s, and what you had was boomers rejecting their parents' drinks, taking up these disco drinks, and then Gen X comes along, and they're not into what the boomers are drinking. They go back to the classics. They start making their own bitters and seeking out obscure brands, returning to the basics. So all of a sudden, again, around the turn of the century, people know what a Ramos Gin Fizz is, and they're making it in unlikely places. Google Ramos Gin Fizz. You've got all these bartenders from Taiwan, you know, making Ramos Gin Fizz competitively, sort of.
Right. Okay, get your recipe out and walk us through your tried and true and often tested method of making a Ramos Gin Fizz?
I've got Mr. Ramos's original recipe in here. He's a little vague about quantities. I've got another recipe that's basically a sort of average of what contemporary bartenders do. You've got these ingredients. I said London Dry or Old Tom Gin. You've got simple syrup, orange flower water, lime juice, lemon juice, egg white, heavy cream, ice, seltzer, and vanilla is optional. I tend to put a little bit in. Put all this stuff, except the cream and the ice, in the shaker and shake it. And then you add the cream and the ice and you shake for some more. And then you strain it into the glass and you top it up with seltzer. And what that does is it gives you this head on the thing that rises above the rim.
Let's zero in a bit more on the orange flower water. Do you have any idea what gave him the idea to use that fairly difficult to find ingredient?
Yeah, no, I don't, Fred. When he was in Baton Rouge, he was experimenting with combining citrus and dairy. The orange flower water kind of came out of nowhere, and I guess it was being used in cooking around there. You've got to do it with orange flower water.
Do you remember your first Ramos Gin Fizz, where you had it?
Fred, I do, because I had never actually had one until I had agreed to write this book. So I know you had one on your honeymoon, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I knew about it, but I had never actually had one. When I went to New Orleans for the first time to begin to do some research on this, I had to sample it here and there and compare different bartenders' versions. I guess I must have had a dozen in various places in New Orleans. And then I started trying to make my own. I think I got it down now, but, there were several not too terribly successful attempts. I drank them anyway.
Like I always say, food and drink taste better when you know their history, and you've given us a fine history in this book.
Thank you. It has a history.
John Shelton Reed, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The book is entitled The Ramos Gin Fizz, written by Dr. John Shelton Reed, and published by the Louisiana State University Press in 2025. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.